Welcome back to episode 4 of the Pop Culture Abstract podcast. This is Jay, and this week I went to Friendship Brewing Company and talked to their owner and head brewer, Brian Nolan. We talked about how he got into beer, brewing, Great American Beer Festival, and then where you can find them. Brian, how'd you get into brewing?
Hey, thanks for asking. Thanks for being here, by the way. And I'll try to keep this short and not bore you to tears or your people. I went to school in Manhattan, Kansas, at Kansas State back in the late 80s. And while I was there pursuing an architecture degree, I had the opportunity to study in London for a semester, which was great. And they pulled a dirty trick on a college kid. They put me in a dormitory where to get to the elevator, you had to walk through a pub.
Oh, that's rough.
Yeah, yeah. So needless to say, I found myself doing some research on the local beer selections. The long story short is when I returned to Manhattan, Kansas, after that four-month journey, the beer of choice in the prairie those years, at least that year, which was 1987, I believe, was Keystone Light.
Yeah.
And after having spent a summer with English beers, Scottish beers, Irish beers, Belgian beers, German beers, Keystone Light just simply wasn't going to work for me. So,
yeah.
And that's part of how it became Friendship, is a friend there and I, this was pre-internet, of course. So we did the old mail order catalog thing and we started home brewing. Kind of as a knee-jerk reaction to me developing a much more advanced palate and simply not being able to drink Keystone Light.
Yeah. So there weren't many craft beer options at that point.
No, there were not. You'll laugh and your people might laugh, but you know, like any college kid, I certainly didn't have a very deep pocket. But you know, after that, I would try to get a little more exotic, and the choices back then, were Foster's, Low and Brow, Moosehead, Molson, which in today's world would not be even remotely exotic, but you know, back then compared to the adjunct light lagers, that was about the best we could do.
Right.
When I could afford it, of course, on my college kid budget.
So then as craft beer kind of took off, did you start following it more? And
absolutely. No. I'm like a lot of folks, you know, my age. I was very greatly impacted by the pioneers, Anchor Steam. Anchor Steam was, a defining moment for me as far as American beers go, in terms of quality and a new and expanded taste character. And then shortly thereafter, Sierra Nevada Pale Ale, was kind of a go-to for many of us early on. And even Sam Adams Boston Lager, which I think you and I both know was a recipe made in St. Louis. But, those beers, I think, were a gateway, leader for a lot of us that were, pardon the pun, just thirsty for more choices.
Right. And I think those are still pretty good gateway beers for a lot of people.
Yeah, they're classics. I mean, to this day, it's real easy to sit down and enjoy, some of those pioneer beers.
So then how did the brewery come about?
Gosh, again, I'll try to not make this too elaborate for everybody. I did practice, as an architect and a commercial developer for most of the years after I did graduate. And like a lot of folks, the industry I found myself in was very specialized. I had a great job while it lasted, but we were building shopping centers and fast food restaurants. And, the downturn in the economy in 2008, it caused our phones to quit ringing. I mean, we were pretty specialized, and that market really went away and went away fast. And in addition to, of course, the banks, the lenders at that time, really put a clamp on financing. So I found myself, kind of rudderless at the time, and was able to find some spot work here and there and was doing okay, but certainly was not feeling very fulfilled. And by 2010, you know, we had decided that we were going to, you know, try to throw our hat in this ring, and the ring being, you know, the emerging craft beer market. I mean, locally and, of course, nationally, it was pretty vibrant, you know, of course, still is. But, you know, I personally was, you know, just really desiring to do something where I enjoyed my work. Mm-hmm. And frankly, I was pretty tired of the corporate world. And, you know, and again, part of the friendship name, you know, there was a lot of encouragement from friends. I mean, a lot of folks were, you know, hey, man, go for it. And, you know, do what you love and you know, go make beer. So, you know, and I want to make it clear, too, that at that time, you know, I picked the brains of a lot of local professional brewers, and they were very gracious. I got a lot of encouragement also from local professionals, and that meant all the difference. That gave me the confidence to, you know, go from the wouldn't it be cool to have a brewery idea to, yeah, I think I can do this. And yeah, I think I can do this meant that I knew I would have support from some of the, you know, the local professionals.
And it's a pretty tight-knit group of craft brewers in St. Louis, so that was probably, I mean, a big impact. I mean, how often do you interact with the other brewers in the area?
Well, you just saw it when you got here. You know, I maintain a very valued friendship with many of them, and it's becoming more competitive. I mean, we're seeing the industry grow and expand, and it's causing breweries to have to compete, especially for shelf space, more than we used to. But to answer your initial question, like I said, it truly made all the difference. I may not have taken the step of actually pursuing this project if it weren't for the comfort of, you know, several of the local guys that were always gracious enough to answer their phone or meet me or have a beer. You know, certainly some of, you know, a lot of that was talks of encouragement, and, you know, sometimes they talked me off the ledge, you know, right. Oh my, you know, Brian, it's going to be okay. We're going to help you. We're going to get you through this. We're going to, you know, help you make good selections. And to this day, as you mentioned, you know, just today I've talked to, you know, four or five local, brewery owners or operators.
So you're in Wentzville, Missouri, which is a little bit outside of St. Louis. Mm-hmm. I know the community is really taken to you.
Mm-hmm.
How big has it been being in this area where when you opened, the closest craft brewery was 20 minutes away?
Yeah. I think that was a double-edged sword in the beginning, you know, because we kind of were the pioneer this far west in the county and in the I guess the big picture, the you know, I think we're kind of considered the westernmost suburb of the city with commuters. You know, I would have done it here no matter what. This is my hometown. I mean, I grew up here, and I was very determined to do it in my home community. A lot of people try to give me credit for opening in what is, I think, the fastest growing community in Missouri for the second year. And I won't take that credit because I would have done it anyway. It's my home. But it certainly doesn't help. I mean, Wentzville is growing frenetically and is supposed to actually double in population within the next 10 years, which is, you know, good and bad. It's kind of crazy to watch it happen. But the great thing is that, you know, I've been very fortunate, and I'm thankful to have had a great reception from the community. Part of that is, you know, I'm the hometown kid. But also, much of the new growth, to our delight, is you know, a really good craft beer demographic. It's, you know, it's young families, it's folks that, you know, want to experience independent businesses and things that are unique and things that are not necessarily a chain or a corporate entity. You know, they want fresh, they want local, and of course we're very happy to you know, be part of that.
Yeah. So you mentioned shelf space. Are you looking into ever getting into canning? I know pretty much everything's on here, right?
Correct. Right now, we're again in a very fortunate place, and I'm very, very thankful. I want to always be grateful. You know, we're at about our 15th month, and we are struggling to just meet demand here in the building. We can't. I mean, we brew our little systems hard out, and we just can't keep the taps full, which is a great problem. we are very actively shopping and looking. We've narrowed it down to several manufacturers where we would triple capacity. We'll jump to a 15 barrel system, and we actually are partnering with our friend Dave Johnson at Missouri Beer Company. He's brewing a couple beers for us just to help us create tank space here on site. All that is a lengthy answer. We looked at a canning line actually last week in Denver that we feel good about. We like it. So that's probably the direction we're going to head. And but with the caveat that our initial plan is really just to can and sell beer to go on property.
Okay.
So, you know, in addition to growlers, you can get, you know, a 4-pack or a 6-pack to go.
Right.
The shelf space battle, you know, is truly fierce and going to get more interesting as the little guys fight the proverbial big guy. It's just not an easy thing to do or a pleasant place to be. So I don't really have my eye on that right now.
Yeah.
I want to look at, again, getting some canned beer off our property. And then also we've got a lot of requests for tap handles, you know, at bars, restaurants, wineries, et cetera. So we would look at some strategic placement of our beer in, you know, not every tavern on the planet, but places that make sense, places that are beer centric, craft beer centric, you know, with the idea that hopefully people would try the beer and then want to visit our tasting room.
Yeah. So would you look at doing like collaborations maybe with other breweries or like?
We love that. Yeah. Yes. We've done some a little bit, and we have 4 or 5 actually. We're in dialogue with 5 different breweries right now locally, and then actually a couple that are not local. Friends we've made, you know, in the industry elsewhere, and that's great fun. I mean, especially me and my guys, you know, none of us are ego guys. None of us, you know, cling so tightly to a particular recipe that anybody has to, you know, be a big ego about that. So, you know, collaborating with other breweries is a great way for us to have fun and create cool beers that benefit both brands or multiple brands. And I mean, that's part of the friendship philosophy is, beer is a social animal, so we want to always treat it that way.
Yeah. So I've seen on your website, and it's on the door, you have the Craft Brewers Association independent seal.
Yes, sir.
How quickly did you adopt that after they introduced it?
The day we saw it. And actually, while we were in Denver at JBF, we had a lot of fun with that. I had all my guys' special monogram shirts made, and we had the independent logo embroidered onto all of our sleeves. Oh. And we were walking past the Brewers Association area booth, and one of the girls saw it and just kind of freaked out. She thought that was so cool.
Yeah.
So she took pictures of all of us, and apparently we're going to be utilized in some of their marketing, which is fun. But I'm a huge, huge believer in, you know, educating the public about what is independent beer versus what is not. There's a lot of muddying of the waters by, you know, the big guy.
Yeah.
And, you know, people can make their choice, and they're going to. But I think it's in our best interest to, as independent brewers that are American-owned and locally-owned, to, you know, just like they do, we have to protect our brand and our livelihood, too.
Yeah. So I know a lot of the smaller breweries that get bought out by the big guy end up getting a lot of flack from the craft beer public.
Yep.
Do you feel it's justified? I mean,
you know, it's hard for me to say. I don't know the circumstances, at any of those breweries. You know, it's hard to say no to a big check.
Yeah.
You know, it is. And, I mean, I personally, I've been pretty vocal in that I personally have made the choice to support breweries that remain independent.
Yeah.
You know, because they're my brethren, you know, we're in the same trench. You know, we're just little guys trying to feed ourselves, feed our families. You know, we're not funded or under the marketing power of a, you know, multinational, monster. So, you know, they say, you know, nothing's going to change, but it sure looks like it does much of the time.
Right.
And thankfully there's, you know, gosh, 4,600 choices now, I think, for breweries. You know, it's just my personal choice to support guys or girls like myself that, you know, our brewing on home soil and, you know, just trying to make it work on a small scale.
Yeah. So since you've opened, do you have any funny stories of things that have happened here?
Oh gosh, it would take us all day. Yeah. Again, we've just had a great run for 15 months. We've just had one heck of a good time. I could recount fun stories with you all day. I'll just grab a couple off the top of my head. Literally a couple days before we opened, you know, we were trying to finalize, we were trying to get ready. I saw a car pull up in front of the brewery and kind of struggle to parallel park, which was interesting because there was no other cars on the street. So I approached, and a woman got out who was, you know, in her 70s, maybe mid-70s, and said, "Hey, you know, are you open?" I'm like, "Gosh, you know, not quite yet, another couple of days." And she said, "Well, my mom is sure going to be disappointed." And I looked in the passenger side, and she had brought her 94-year-old mother to have a beer.
Oh, wow.
And she said she's in a nursing home, and she's allowed two beers a day, and she was really looking forward to the first local brewery, you know, because yeah. She's in a nearby nursing home. So, of course, we said, get her in here. You know, we brought her in, and we gave her two beers, of course, for free. And, you know, she's now as regular as a woman who's now 95 can be.
Yeah.
And we're thrilled to have her. You know, on the brewing side, you bet. I mean, we've learned a lot in the first year. And we've been very fortunate. We've had a really good success rate with our brews. But, you know, we had a day where we, you know, were adding hops to do a you know, dry hopping on a particular beer, and, you know, literally had a volcano of pressurized beer. You know, we've got 22-foot ceilings, and the beer pressure was enough that it pretty well painted the ceiling, you know.
Oh, wow.
22 feet high. So that beer turned into Hopcano for obvious reasons, because it was a dry hop volcano of beer. So, you know, yeah, I think most brewers in the world have taken a bath in some way or another. So we certainly did. And, you know, probably the most gratifying thing is we, in just a short time, have obtained, acquired, built up an amazing group of new friends.
Yeah.
I mean, the name of the brewery, I think, really has served its purpose well. You know, we all have here a lot of new friends who started as patrons, which is great. But they're people we really, really care about, and we spend time with them away from the brewery. And even more so, what I'm very proud of is this has been a location that has created a lot of friendships. You know, folks come in and they share a table on multiple examples. There's folks that met here, and now they, you know, they vacation together. They get together and barbecue. So it's been what I hoped it would be, and that's a hub for the community, a meeting place, a place to chill, and you know, just to celebrate old friendships and create new ones.
So what are the challenges of going from home brewing, doing 5 or 10 gallons at a time, to a bigger facility like this? How many barrels do you guys do a year?
Last year, you know, we were able to do just shy of 800. I think it was about 760, which was pushing our little system, you know, fairly hard. To answer your question, we were pleasantly surprised that we were able to scale up our recipes with good success. We anticipated more challenges than we had, because we had a lot of good teachers. We had a lot of guys that helped us. B, you know, from as homebrewers, we were used to, you know, having our efficiency, you know, in the 70-ish range. Mm-hmm. And all of our recipes were scaled up for that. And our little mash tun does a great job. We're hitting like 92% efficiency. Wow. All the time. So all of our beers in the beginning, you know, were an ABV point or more higher than our target. So, you know, we had to, you know, we were brewing Imperials on accident. So that was a nice surprise. And that's because, you know, as most of us as homebrewers, even though there are some really elaborate systems now, you know, we kind of cobbled our stuff together and it worked fairly well. Whereas, you know, most commercial systems, if they're well engineered, you know, are built to make good beer, you know, high efficiency beer. So we learned that right away. And like I said, the biggest way that we weathered the transition, and still are, well, heck, we learn every day, every brew, is, again, we had a lot of great help. A lot of guys, you know, Mark Gottfried from Kreftig, Dave Johnson, Brian Owens from O'Fallon, you know, they're here all the time, yeah. You know, and they put up with our dumb questions and have guided us a lot.
Yeah. So what was the first style that you brewed as a home brewer?
It was a brown. You know, I had returned from England and, you know, as I mentioned in the late 80s, in the homebrewing catalogs, there weren't many choices. Yeah. You know, it was, you know, I think at the time a brown, a mild, a pale ale maybe. But when I was in England, there was a local brown that I enjoyed. So that yeah. seemed like a good maiden voyage. And the brown we have now is similar, but we've certainly tweaked it over 30 years and Americanized it a little bit.
Yeah. So what's your favorite style to brew then now?
Oh, gosh, I love that question. I hear that from patrons all the time. And, of course, I say, you know, you're not supposed to say if you have a favorite child.
Yeah.
You know, I vary with the seasons like a lot of people. And you know, right now is a transitional time. I'm a hophead first and foremost. I love a good balanced IPA. And, you know, we brew several that I think are quite tasty. But, you know, there's a lot of complexities and nuances in you know, porters and stouts and bigger beers. I love Belgians. We're always tweaking our Belgians and, you know, playing with the yeast with different temperatures and fermenting. And then, you know, I think I see, somebody asked me just yesterday what I see on the horizon, and it seems to me like I'm seeing kind of a throwback to folks making really nice, clean lager styles.
Yeah.
So we've got our first Marzen Oktoberfest in the tank that'll come out hopefully in the next few days, and then we're going to do a Pilsner and then probably a Dunkel. So, you know, I guess what is intriguing for me is having so many nice choices.
Yeah. So what is the most popular one you've brewed?
A lot of professional brewers told me when we started, or advised me, I should say, you know, don't necessarily fall in love with any of your beers because, you know, your favorite beer may not be the public's favorite beer.
Right.
And you know, we're all, as home brewers, we all get real proud of, you know, our triple IPAs or our, you know, some, you know, really elaborate beer. You know, what people like typically is a nice, simple, clean beer.
Yeah.
And our Andrews Ale, which is a cream ale, kind of a cream ale blonde hybrid, we just sell the daylights out of it.
Yeah.
Our brown ale is the next best seller, and it's a nice, you know, clean, easy drinking brown. Whichever IPA we have on tap does well because it's just a popular style. So, you know, those would be the first three. Dark Belgians have done surprisingly well in this market. I wasn't sure that Wentzville would, you know, jump on that as quickly as they have, but they certainly have, or at least our patrons. And now, you know, it's the time of the year when people are looking for pumpkins, sweet potatoes, porters, and stouts. So we've got several in the tank.
So have you gotten into sours a whole lot, or?
We personally know, but our partners, my brewer Bobby Love, his sons Brett and Brandon brew with us here. They have their own TTB licensed brewery called After Hours.
Okay.
And they were essentially an all sours production.
Yeah.
So I'm more than happy to let them hold the flag on the sours.
Yeah.
I like to keep our brew house, you know, devoid of the bugs. I certainly recognize that sours are, you know, a very popular segment of the brewing community, beer drinking community. And we, at this point in time, just I choose not to do that. We, in our new brewery, I think we're going to get at least one fooder and, you know, do some aging that way. But, you know, right now I have to focus on, you know, some basic styles because that's what my patrons are looking for.
Yeah.
And like we talked about earlier, I don't even have enough tank space to keep up with that right now.
Right.
So, perhaps down the road.
So you'd mentioned you've been to the Great American Beer Festival.
Yes, sir.
How was it this year?
It was fantastic. You know, it always is. It's just, you know, there's not a bigger, you know, party in terms of that many great beer choices in one room. I mean, I'm sure that there's beer festivals in Germany and, you know, the October, you know, Fest and whatnot are bigger,
yeah,
but there's not 4,000 beer choices on the floor. I mean, it's just amazing. So it was a really nice opportunity for myself and my partner, Mike, to take 9 of us out there and treat everybody to, you know, appreciation for a really good first year.
Yeah.
We had a great time. We drank a lot of local beer. We drank a lot of beer, good beer, at the event. You know, had a lot of laughs, which is important for a team. Mm-hmm. And, you know, great meals, great camaraderie. And we feel like we got a lot of really great feedback on the floor from the folks visiting the festival. So it was just a win-win all around.
Did you enter anything?
We did. We just entered 2 beers. And, you know, like anybody, we there were some lots of local breweries that brought home medals, which is wonderful, and I congratulated all of them. They deserve it. You know, first year, I really wanted my guys to get a medal. Mm. We didn't. But after the competition, a judge did approach our booth, and he wanted to revisit our Laplander, which is a double IPA, because when he was judging it, he said, man, I really liked this beer. Mm-hmm. And shared with us that out of 220 entries in that category, that beer ranked 5th.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, it wasn't a medal, but I told my guys, you know, be proud of yourselves.
Yeah,
you
that's
know,
a huge win.
It is.
Yeah.
And we learned a lot about how to compete.
Yeah.
You know, we had a lot of great dialogue with other breweries, you know, medal winners included, and learned some ways to be better competitors. So
yeah,
we'll be back.
What new beer did you have there that just wowed you?
There's a lot of great beers there. I'm a huge fan of barrel aging, not just both because there's so many styles now, but you know, bourbon, rum, and then of course there's lots of others, wine and tequila, etc. But while I was there, I had a couple rum barrel aged beers that, you know, I would have just sat there and sipped until, you know, somebody had to drag me home.
Yeah.
I didn't, because we had to be big boys. But, you know, my next, you know, just for fun, just for fantasy, just for the sake of you know, the brewing is we've got some rum barrels ordered. So we're going to do some barrel aging. We've been doing a lot with local bourbon barrel aging. We've got a couple port wine barrels. And part of what we hope to do with our expansion is have a lot more space for barrel aging of different types.
Yeah. All right. So if people want to find you, where are you at?
Oh, gosh. Well, I'm personally here every darn day if you want to come to 100 Pittman Avenue in Wentzville. But like everybody, you know, we do our best to have a good presence in social media. That seems to be the way of the world. So Friendship Brewing Company on Facebook, Friendship Beer on Twitter, and Friendship Brewing on Instagram.
Okay.
And you know, we're here 6 days a week. Mm-hmm. We're closed on Mondays, but Tuesday through Thursday open 4 to 10. Friday, Saturday we open at noon for lunch and close at 11 o'clock, and then on Sunday we actually open at 10. We have a Build Your Own Bloody Mary bar and breakfast specials. Mm-hmm. And we close at 5 o'clock, so kind of a Sunday fun day type thing. So yeah, if you haven't been here, we sure hope to see you.
All right. Well, thanks for taking time to talk to me.
My pleasure. Thanks so much for coming out.
No problem.
Cheers.
I want to thank Brian again for sitting down and talking with me. I highly recommend checking out Friendship Brewing. Every beer I've had there has been really good. Please go to popcultureabstract.com to check out my writing, the social media links, and links to Google Play and iTunes so you can subscribe to the show and rate and review us. A few other links to check out, ijov.net, the Inside Joke Outside Voice Podcast Network. You'll find other great podcasts there. Also check out Podcast Land. They do a monthly voting for Podcast of the Month, and you can search for Pop Culture Abstract there and vote for it. You get 5 votes a month.
The intro music was Social Damage by the band The Euclids.
The song of the week is The Sound by Rainchild.
Sky or above the dust feels the same. It hurts me. little squeeze around your neck lets me know your name. Hurts the need to hold you down. A dream is dead all around this red with a short life left. Just keep breaking the threads, not holding down.